And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
...2008. The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. Enter a brave group of Jedi led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi!
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. In this episode, General Krell orders Captain Rex and the clone troopers of the 501st Legion to conquer a heavily fortified Umbaran airbase and will not accept anything else less than victory. It is an almost certain suicide mission unless the clones can use their ingenuity to defeat their new enemy. There will be human centipedes! Rex trying really hard to keep all his children from killing each other. The 501st questioning everything, and then Fives and Hardcase go on a wild ride. We're talking about the General this week. How you doing, Chris?
Well, it's actually an Umbaran centipede, but, you know.
That's true, but they're human-like.
It's a humanoid centipede.
I wanted to give a chance. I just wanted to throw human centipedes in there. Because we're those kind of
people.
Well,
when in doubt, you can always call it a space human centipede.
Or
a human space centipede.
Human space centipede. Ugh. Yeah. Oh my gosh. So, the new Darth Vader comic came out, and it is... I had two bits of information. It is number 4. I had to get up and go see what number it was. It was issue 4, and something kind of proved how amazing Anakin is. Is that, because the whole point of the first arc is he's really trying hard to, like, find a lightsaber to make his Sith lightsaber. And he gets thrown off a cliff. And in the process, he breaks his metal arm and his metal leg. And laying there in pain, groaning, he uses the Force to take apart a robot and rebuild his arm and his leg with the Force.
Whoa.
And I was just like, oh, shit, Anakin.
That's like the kid who got trapped under the rock and then had to use his penknife to take his leg off, or his arm off, or something. I think it was his arm.
Only the opposite, because he had built it.
Yeah.
But the other cool thing I saw with the Darth Vader comics is, I don't have it in front of me what number it is. Yes, I do. I took a picture of it, because I'm smart. So, you guys know I work in a comic book store. And our new, I don't want to install updates, phone. Install later. Remind me later. Why do I have to put in a passcode to tell you to remind me later? The new Darth Vader comic. I don't care that my iCloud storage is full. Okay, new Darth previews came in. I work in a comic book store. And I put it on our Twitter. You can check it out at JGuysAndJedi. But they had a preview for Darth Vader number 6. And it's the fucking Grand Inquisitor from Rebels season 1.
Oh.
It looks amazing. Let me send this to you. I guess I can send it to you on Skype because I'm on Skype. But yeah, they're finally introducing the Inquisitors into the Darth Vader comic. Come, Vader. I don't want to choose a theme phone. I don't care if my Skype has a theme. My theme is hurry the fuck up. I don't care. Go away, all of you. How do I do this? Dismiss all cards. Oh my god. Technology. You're so useless when I don't need you to be. Anyway, they're finally introducing the Inquisitors into Rebels. And I'm just really stupid excited because it looks amazing. Okay. And the other thing I saw is that they're putting Son of Dathomir, Marvel's... reprinting Son of Dathomir, which was the Dark Horse Darth Maul comic that was like the only canon Dark Horse comic right now.
I was just gonna say, does that make it canon now, or it was canon already?
it was canon already, like, because it came out like a couple months right before the Disney buyout, and Marvel and Lucasfilms and all them were like, yeah, we'll keep this. Yeah, that sounds great. But when I saw the Inquisitor coming in the Dark Horse comics, like, I screamed in my store, and my coworker, who knows me really well, just looks at me and goes, it's a Star Wars thing, isn't it? And I was like, yes!
I can sort of see a little thumbnail of it. It looks really nice. It looks like it looks a little like the cover of Splinter of the Mind's Eye.
Yeah, maybe that's what they were going for. Oh, and my thumb's there, too. But, yeah, I'm very excited to finally have the Inquisitors to come into my Darth Vader and it be in the common everything. And yes, because the animated stuff is important on our animated Star Wars podcast. I'm excited. So, yeah. That's all my Star Wars cool news for the week that I freaked out over the last few days. Chris has a mask that says shit.
Yes, I do.
Chris went garage sailing and he was like, I got a General Grievous mask. All it says is shit.
Its batteries are almost dead. It's a talking General Grievous mask. I almost didn't get it. Scott McGregor, who is garage sailing with me, scoffled it up first, but I guilted him and guilted him and guilted him till he gave it to me. Yeah, his batteries are almost dead, but he's just got one little gasp of power and all he can say is shit.
That one last curse for the Jedis. Jedis, you're a pizza.
Yeah, well, with all the music and sound effects, you didn't hear him say that in episode 3 when Obi-Wan finally blasted him, but that was his last words.
Shit.
Last word.
So, yeah, that's our cool Star Wars things. But I keep arguing, like, yeah, I kind of want to hear what he says for real, but at the same time, I like that every time he starts dying, he just says shit.
Yeah, I'm going to battery him up. Yeah, I mean, his batteries will die someday and he'll do it again, but I definitely want to hear what he has to say. And of course, I'll bring him back on the show when he is batteried up.
we'll interview your Grievous mask and ask him just ridiculous questions.
Yes.
I'm down for that.
Maybe I can make prank calls with him.
Kenobi!
Like those old Arnold Schwarzenegger soundboards.
Just have it just be like, hello, welcome to Domino's Pizza. I will end you. I'm sorry, sir, you're gonna have to pull back. Yes. We'll have fun with Grievous as soon as we get batteries for him, so.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm very excited about this episode.
I can see by the notes that
the
you're
the sheer
excited.
Amount of notes.
I could also see by watching the episode that you're going to be excited.
Yeah, and we were talking before, guys. We're pretty sure Chris hasn't seen this episode, so it was all new to him.
Yeah, no, I would. There's certain elements we'll get to, you know, when they come up in the episode that I think I would have remembered.
They're really hard to forget.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well,
there's two things in this episode that if I saw this before, I know it at that point in the show, I would have gone like, oh, yeah, I remember that.
I know one of them because you told me beforehand. Can I guess, see if I can guess the other one?
I'll bet you can.
It's Fives and Hardcase flying the airships.
Yes.
Yeah, that's such a great scene. All right, you ready to get started?
I am ready.
All right, I'm going to take a sip of my coffee because I'm about to read a lot. Okay. The General is the 74th episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars and aired on November 4th, 2011. It is written by Matt Michnovitz and directed by Walter Murch. Some extra information for you. Walter Murch is actually a guest director for this episode. He is a sound designer and a sound mixer in movies. His movies include The Godfather Part 2 and 3, Cold Mountain, Jarhead, and Apocalypse Now, which sort of makes sense why they brought him on for a war episode.
Really, that's quite a list of accomplishments there.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I think he understands war movies pretty well.
Godfather Part 2 and Apocalypse Now are pretty good credits on your resume.
And Cold Mountain has that big opening war scene. It was one of the Civil War battles, and Jarhead's another war movie. So, right.
Apocalypse Now has really some good. Amazing sound design. I don't know if you've ever watched it, but
I haven't. But I've seen clips of it, so I've never sat down and watched the whole thing straight through.
Sound wise, it's amazing. The first time I watched Apocalypse Now, it was with someone who was a huge Francis Ford Coppola fan, and it was in the early days of VCRs, and he had one of the first VCRs, and it was really fancy, and he actually hooked the VCR up to the stereo so that we could hear the stereo sound of Apocalypse Now to dig on the sound design, which was amazing.
Yeah. Well, same guy who did the sound design directed this episode, so.
Pretty good.
Yeah. All right, more episode information for you. When Hardcase is climbing up the tree to get over the fence, he says, "I prefer a straight fight over all the sneaking around." This was a nod to Han Solo saying it in Star Wars Episode 4.
Yeah, it's in my notes.
Yep. All right, so I want to talk to you guys about Sergeant Appo for a minute. While he's in a very small portion of this episode and in Clone Wars as a whole, he is a significant character later. He is Rex's sergeant in the 501st. Well, I'm going to give you a little lesson on clone history today, so you ready? This is the first time the character was named in the show. Appo becomes the commander of the 501st after Captain Rex. The 501st didn't have a named commander all throughout the Clone Wars. Not even Rex made it to the rank of commander, which is a discussion for another time because he totally should have been a commander. So how did Appo actually gain a higher rank than Rex, and when did this happen? It revolved around three events that happened at the same time, which is the Battle of Coruscant and the Siege of Mandalore, immediately followed by Order 66. I won't go into too many details since I know Chris hasn't seen the end of Clone Wars. Also, not all of this is confirmed canon. We know bits of what happened during the Siege of Mandalore from Rebels episodes, because Rex, Ahsoka, and Darth Maul all refer to the Siege of Mandalore. We know from Dave Filoni and Ashley Eckstein, who gave us different glimpses at Celebration, and from the Ahsoka novel, which was the first appearance of the Siege of Mandalore. So I'm going to put this as simply as possible without spoiling stuff for Chris. So here we go. So some shit goes down on Mandalore, I won't say what, and then the Republic has to step in. Dave Filoni said that Anakin asked Ahsoka to help him with this. During the beginning of the siege, the opening of Episode 3 happens and Palpatine is kidnapped by General Grievous. That is the Battle of Coruscant that is happening the exact same time that we see in the movie. Obi-Wan and Anakin must leave the Siege of Mandalore to go help save Palpatine, as we see in the opening of Episode 3. Dave Filoni said that Anakin split the 501st in half. He left Rex with Ahsoka to lead her new platoon. And if you look it up, her men created orange patterns on their helmets, like her facial markings in Leku. It is a really cool clone armor design, and I highly suggest looking them up, because they're really cool. And Rex and Ahsoka stay behind to fight at the Siege of Mandalore. Now back to Sergeant Appo, which is what we're getting to. Sergeant Appo... This next part is kind of fan speculations, but you can connect the dots based on canon information that we've been given. We can assume that with Rex not there, Appo stepped up into the ranks of commander to lead the Battle of Coruscant for Anakin. And then Order 66 happens. Appo is the commander in Episode 3 during Order 66, and he is now leading Anakin's side of the 501st. This is how some fans and I believe that Appo got the rank of commander before Rex. And the scene in Episode 3 where Bail Organa shows up at the Jedi Temple, a clone commander stops him from entering because Order 66 is going down. That was Commander Appo who stopped Bail Organa. He was also the one attacked by the Padawan before the child was killed by other clones. And that concludes your clone history for the day.
Yeah.
Yep. And two more parts. The arrow on Appo's helmet is a nod to Appa. A-P-P-A, not A-P-P-O, who is a character from Avatar The Last Airbender. It was a show that Dave Filoni had previously worked on. It's also one of my favorite shows of all time. And like I said last week, I will not be doing the episode Featurette this week because it covers all four arcs of the Umbara arc. I'm going to save that to the last episode. There you go.
See, I think George Kurstick worked on Avatar.
I think he did too.
That might be how he got it. That might be how he got into Clone Wars. but I can't be sure. If you're listening, get a hold of us and correct us if we're wrong.
Yeah, Gene. Actually, that Gene might not know that one. I don't know if he's ever seen Avatar, yeah. But he should, because Avatar The Last Airbender is an absolutely amazing cartoon.
I've never seen it. I've only seen the stupid M. Night Shyamalan version movie.
Oh my god, please, no. No. The thing about Avatar, it has a bit of a slow beginning. The first season's kind of slow and stuff, because it's like just really building the world and building the characters. The first couple episodes are kind of silly and stuff like that. And then as you're moving along, it's like, oh, episode 4, there was a genocide. Look at all the skeletons. Oh. And then you keep going a little long, a little bit of ways. And you're like, this is cool, you know, they have some, like, line characters that are fighting in wars, and there's a lot of representation, and all the females are cool and stuff like that, and this is great. And then you're like, oh, we get to Ba Sing Se. This is real world China happening right now in a television show. Oh, God. What do you mean people are being murdered in secret? Oh, so we're in the Fire Nation, and they're actually teaching their children propaganda. Look at all the propaganda that's happening. Oh, it's kind of like Russia right now. Oh, God. So
it escalates quickly, is what you're saying.
When you get to about the second season, the first season's pretty lighthearted and fun. It has its dark moments, but it's for the most part lighthearted and fun. And season 2 happens, and everything just kind of slowly starts going downhill after that. Kind of a lot like Clone Wars, but a lot faster, because it was only 3 seasons. So it's a lot faster of a downward spiral. But the thing is, they never let it get too dark, because all 4 characters have, like, this... They understand the gravity of the war and stuff like that, but they do little things to keep it on a positive spin, so, like, your child watching this won't be, like, crawling in a ball.
Won't grow up to be a nihilist, yeah.
Yeah, but what's fun is then on Korra, they made it more... Because Korra was the show that followed afterwards, so which was 4 seasons? They kind of geared it more towards teenagers, because those kids who had originally watched Avatar are now teenagers, so it's kind of geared more towards teenagers. So it does handle more like PTSD and mental health. It covers much like more broad, like, I guess, cognitive topics than, hey, let's teach kids that propaganda is bad. So it's a different beast, and it's apples and oranges. Like, they're both fruit, but they're very different fruit, Sean.
You know who's a fruit, but a different fruit?
I was gonna say, who likes to squeeze oranges?
Ooh! Mmm! Friend I bought this week!
You brought a friend?
Friend for hope!
Really? Oh, right. Wait, it's you.
Get ready to turn those clankers into scrap metal.
In bed.
Keep fighting.
In bed.
We could use a Jedi about now.
In bed.
The mission always comes first, sir.
In bed. In bed. Oh, it's your new friend, Hope.
You got me a Rex.
Guess what I found at the same rummage sale as Greavy.
The name's Rex, but you'll call me Captain or Sir.
Yes, sir. Is it like a... I can't see it because we don't have video. Is it like a mask or is it a toy?
It's a 12-inch action figure. With a giant gun that goes... Yeah, he's a biggin'. And you push his belt buckle.
You're exactly the kind of man I need in the 501st.
In bed!
Yes.
Get ready to turn those clankers into scrap metal!
Yep.
That's really sweet, thank you! Oh, I don't know what to say!
Oh yeah, he's on the way over to your house. I needed him just for this episode.
Oh, Sorry, guys, I didn't know. Oh, thank you, Yoda. I will give you one free orange squeeze. It's okay. It's consensual. Consent is important. Thank you, Chris. That's really super sweet. It makes me happy that I found a Grievous comic that I need to buy and send you to. And I already know. I figured out what I'm going to get you for Christmas.
Uh-oh,
I already know, and I've been, like, scoping out a good price for it and stuff. But I'm going to see if I can find it first at Dragon Con for not a bajillion dollars.
Well, that's right. Dragon's Con's coming up.
Yes, I will need that Wednesday off.
Well.
So, just FYI, because I will be in Atlanta setting up that Wednesday. So, all right.
So, you ready?
I'm ready for
the
sexy
path.
Yodas. Oh, sorry.
The path of ignorance is guided by fear. And bad.
I had a question for you. What do you fear in bed, Honeywell?
Oh, more and more the older I get. Are you kidding me? My biggest fear is some backbone or piece of ligament will go out. That's the more realistic fear as age sets in.
Mine, I gotta say, bugs. Nothing ruins the moment when you look up and there's a cockroach on the wall.
Oh yeah, that's no good.
No, that was my college. My boyfriend's house was disgusting. You would look down and there's a cockroach crawling up your leg in the middle of stuff, and you're just like, oh hey buddy.
Hey, yeah, that takes the mood right out the window.
Yep, bugs. Bugs are my fear in bed. No bugs. No human centipedes for me. Nope.
Umbaran centipedes.
Which are so much cooler. My cat caught a centipede today. She put it in her mouth, and then I think it stung her because she just started licking the air for like 5 minutes.
Yeah, it probably. I don't know if it stung. It probably like just released some sort of foul pheromone chemical that she got a taste of.
Yeah. Because it was wiggling around, and she picked it up, and then she just dropped it immediately and just started licking the air today. It's a centipede kind of day.
Yeah, centipedes are good. They eat all the stuff that you don't like. They will eat cucarachas and.
They are bitches when they bite you or sting you.
Centipedes?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not like they come at you either.
Or some millipedes. Which ones have, like, the devil mouths?
I think it's the millipedes that have the...
Okay, those are the bitches. I got stung or bit by a millipede on my ankle. For one, it hurt. Two, it was there and my ankle was swollen for a week. Three, this was about a year ago and I have a scar.
Wow.
They're assholes. Like, they are the assholes of the asshole bugs. I don't like them. So, yeah. All right. On to more assholes, like General Krill. You ready for Act 1?
He is an asshole.
He is the biggest asshole who ever squatted out a turd. I'd rather have Tarkin.
Okay, I'm getting ready to talk shit about him. Now, before we even started the story, so I'll let you tell the story before I start talking shit about this guy.
All right, so Act 1?
Act 1.
All right. So, some shit went down last week, so let's catch you up. The Republic is invading the planet of Umbara because the people left the Republic to join the Separatists, and the planet sits on an important trade route, so they really need to get this planet back. In the middle of the fight, Anakin was suddenly called back to Coruscant by Palpatine. This asshole Jedi named General Pong Krell showed up taking over Rex and the 501st for Anakin. The moment that Anakin leads, shit starts going down. Krell talks down to the clones, calling them by their numbers and not their names. He berates them, and he doesn't really care for their well-being. Rex and the others start noticing this, but Rex is trying to keep his men alive and be a good soldier and follow orders. The group is currently trying to take a city to aid in the campaign. So some important characters to keep in mind for this episode. Fives is continuing to question everything and keeps going to Rex about Krill. Dogma is a suck-up doing everything that Krill wants. Tup is a precious rookie and must be protected at all times because he's adorable. Hardcase is a crazy loon who wants to shoot shit with his big-ass gun, while Jesse is the Joker making light of the situations. Kix is the medic, and Rex, like a single parent, is just trying to keep all the kids from killing each other on a road trip from hell. So let's continue. A battle is waging as the 501st fights in barn flying ships and ground soldiers. Rex is commanding the best that he can, while other clones like Kix, the medic, who is the medic and the only clone that we know that makes it to the Force Awakens timeline, is trying to help the wounded. Obi-Wan calls into Krell, and he's like, "Yo, some shit is happening over here at the capital city." And Obi-Wan tells them that there's an airbase that's giving the capital city supplies. And Krell is like, "Yo, we're under fire here too, but we can't do anything for you, bro." And Obi-Wan's like, "You gotta go capture that airbase, guys." And Rex and Krell need to capture the airfield so Obi-Wan's men will have a chance to hit the capital city. They must take that airbase or the Republic will lose. I lost my spot in the middle of that, could you tell? The 501st gets underway from the current fight and are heading out towards the airbase. Krell and Rex goes up to the ridge, spotting the airbase in the distance. Rex is like, "Wow, it's super heavily fortified. We should totally sneak around." And Krell is like, "No, it's more manly and cool if we march to the center of the gorge, up to their front door, and take them on head on. That's more metal." And Rex is like, "I like soft rock. Also, that's a narrow gorge. We'll be walking in single file and be exposed. We should recon and check out another route." And Krell is like, "Let me guilt you with Obi-Wan possibly dying right now because we are discussing routes. You will go up the quick middle way or Obi-Wan's death will be on your head." And Rex is like, "Oh, God, I miss Anakin." Rex goes to his men and tries to sound as optimistic as possible. And he's like, "Hey, guys, we're going to go down this gorge. It'll be fun." "Yeah." And right away, all the clones are like, "This is a bad plan, bro." And even Tup, who is a rookie, is like, "Guys, this is my first mission, and I know that this is a suicide plan." And Jesse comes right out and calls Krell crazy. And Fives, who I might just start calling Captain Descent, is like, "Rex, come on, man. These strategies are massively flawed. We are sure that Krell is wrong here." And meanwhile, Hardcase is just like, "Look at my big gun! Let's go shoot stuff, guys! Woo!" And then Dogma shows up to suck up to Krell. To Krell glasses? What did I write there? And then Dogma pushes up his suck up to Krell glasses, going, "I think the general is perfect, guys, and I smell his shit first because my head is so far up Krell's ass right now. He is a perfect being." And everyone's like, "Shut up, Dogma, no one cares." Everyone is fighting, and Rex tries to calm down all of his children, and he says that Anakin's plans are crazy, but they work. And Fives is like, "Dude, Anakin is usually leading us, he's fighting by our side, and he's protecting us. Krell is a coward, up on a ridge, nowhere to be seen. This is a suicide mission." And Fives' words makes the men really anxious. And Rex pulls Fives to the side, and he's like, "Look, Fives, I know you're going through some character development right now in the middle of the story, and it's going to be super cool in the long run. But right now, I really need you on my side." And Fives is like, "No. No. After losing my best friend Echo at the Citadel, I realized something. The Republic and the Jedi are flawed, and I'm here to fight and to protect our brothers. That's it. That's all I'm fighting for right now." And Rex is like, "Krell's a war hero, and he gets stuff done." And Fives is like, "He has the highest casualty numbers of any other Jedi and super low troop morale. He's going to get us killed." And Rex is like, "We're soldiers. We have a duty to protect the Republic and lay down our lives if needed." And Fives, Mr. Captain Descent, says another golden line. "Do you believe that, or is that what you're engineered to think. Rex chooses to honor his code as a soldier, and the captain will go through with Krell's plan. Woo! Big Act 1, what'd you think?
This is my thing. What recourse do the clones have anyway? You know,
what do you mean?
When they get insubordinate, what can they, you know, they're all arguing that this is an awful plan. You know, Anakin wouldn't have done this. I mean, I agree with their insubordination, but at the same time, what do they propose to do about it, you know?
They can get court-martialed. I know when Slick, the traitor clone from season one, he got court-martialed.
Well, no, I mean, what can they do against Krell? What's the point of getting insubordinate unless you're planning on, like, you know, shooting him in the back when nobody's looking or something, you know? I mean...
Yeah.
You can't... I'm thinking that the clones can't court-martial Krell, you know, take up a vote of no confidence or go to the Jedi Council and say, you know, maybe afterwards they can. But at that point, all they're doing is forcing Rex into a impossible situation where, you know... What's he gonna do? He can go up and say, and he's Rex anyway, so he does register his dismay at the plan and, you know, offer other solutions, but he knows that ultimately he's gonna have to do what this guy does, and ultimately everybody does what everybody orders everybody to do, because that's pretty much all they can do.
Yeah,
so it's like a lot of effort to sit there and fight and get yourselves all wound up, you know, over it. But then again, then I started thinking about it, and I'm like, maybe this wouldn't happen in any clone division, but this is Anakin, you know, these guys are Anakin's clones. So they have a little more leeway towards that. So it sort of makes sense.
I kind of want to know what would happen if Krell was like, guys, move out, and they all just went, no. What is Krell to do when there's like 100 clones in one of him? If they were just like, no, we don't feel like fighting today. You go. You'll have fun.
I mean, he would have to do something like behead Rex in front of everybody and go, there, you want that, some of that, and like try to intimidate them into fighting or something. Yeah, it wouldn't be pretty, but...
I'm going to give you a spoiler of something that doesn't happen, but I did always wonder... throughout this arc when I first watched it, why don't they try and call Obi-Wan?
That could get him in trouble too, though, you know,
but
that's insubordinate
like,
too.
Like, I was waiting for, like, the first time I watched this, I was waiting for Rex to try and sneak away and be like, Obi-Wan, this guy's crazy. I need some advice.
And Obi-Wan would be like, what am I gonna do, you know?
The only thing I could think of in that situation is at least Obi-Wan's part of the council, and he could be like, if you feel, he's like, I know you, Rex. I mean, because Obi-Wan even said in the Deserter, Rex is a good man. So, like, he has a long-standing repertoire with Rex. So I feel like if Rex was like, there is something very wrong here, I feel like Obi-Wan would be like, I give you permission on behalf of the council to do what you need to do.
And speaking of Obi-Wan, I was a little bit surprised, judging by... earlier seasons of this. Okay, so the first one was, the first episode of this arc wasn't a one and done, but it had a sort of ending, you know?
Yeah.
It wasn't like as much of the Mon Cal one, where it was sort of like, just sort of like, we're fighting, and then it ends, and it's like, okay, we'll come back on this, you know? So
yeah.
I thought since they did it that way, that what they would probably do with this episode is switch to maybe like an opening scene with Rex and Krell, and then as soon as I saw Obi-Wan in the beginning, I'm like, oh, here's where they transition in and we see Obi-Wan's, or I thought they might even like go back in time a couple hours and show you what Obi-Wan was doing while Rex and his people were, you know,
nope.
and sort of have a different storyline going on, but nope, they're sticking right with the one before it.
Yep, this is all the clones straight through.
And I should have known that by how much you liked this episode that they would be staying with Rex.
Yep.
Keep fighting!
I'm so excited.
When Krell's like, we'll do a forward assault, I'm like, oh, there's a big surprise right there. My only other note is, I just love the Umbaran ships and their weapons. And how they sound, and how they look, and how they act, and how they move. They just have some neat... They're Star Wars-y, but they don't look like anything we've seen before. So, and I really like it.
That's one of my notes, too. I just like everything about Umbara. I love the planet design. I like... There was, like, a plant that, like, pulsed slowly and glowed. Like, it would glow and then fade, and then glow and then fade. And, like, how that's all the light sources. And, like, their ships are, like, early TIE fighters, which we talked about last week. And I just love everything about Umbara. I think it's such a great design because it's so radically different from what we're used to. But at the same time, it's just, like, it's like you said, it's still very Star Wars-y.
Yes.
So, I have a wall of notes. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
So, I just wanted to put, I'm still putting a pin in it. I have a theory of why Palpatine took Anakin away from this battle. I just want to remind everybody I'm saving it for episode 4.
Oh,
but
okay.
I more put it here just to remind myself that it's there. I know we'll get to episode 4. I don't completely forget. Because I don't keep reminding myself. And then the week afterwards, I'm just going to be like, fuck! And have to go back and talk about it. So just a reminder. So again, we see that Krell is super chill with other Jedi. And then as he's talking to Obi-Wan, he like pushes away a dead clone with his foot as he's talking to Obi-Wan. And I was just like, you're still an asshole.
Yeah.
So I was thinking back to last week when one of the Clone Wars designers, and they called Umbara the video game world. And when they were looking at the airbase in the distance, it has a beam of light shooting out of it, which is like one of the most video game things to do. It's like, oh, that's the checkpoint. We gotta get there to save our game.
It was very Tron-like, too.
Yeah.
That reminded me of the original Tron, where they had the hub where you could talk to the people in the real world, the users.
Yeah, it reminded me, even though it's not really a checkpoint, one of my favorite games of all time is Shadows of the Colossus. And every time you beat a Colossus, a beam of light goes up into the air, so you can see all the different Colossus if you look out like that you've defeated. And it also reminded me of like this meme where a cat was sitting in a ray of sunlight.
In a beam of light.
And then everything else around it was dark, and the underneath the picture is like, I must talk to my cat. This cat, it's my next side mission of my game.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was just such a video game thing to do. Poor Rex, he's trying to be so optimistic while the plans are really bad.
That's all you can do at that point, you know?
I just love how he walks up, he's just like, hey, guys!
Really, that's the fate of a clone, is you have to either make the best of it or go full-out rebellion, which you is not probably gonna end well either, you know?
Yeah. But I have 1, 2, 3, 4 I have 5 big notes about the scene of the clones fighting. So I'm gonna break them down one at a time. So I love the scene where all the clones are fighting over Krell's plans. This is what makes the 501st so unique. They're supposed to be bred and cloned to follow every single order. But over the first 3 seasons of Clone Wars, we've seen their individuality form, making them unique. They are good soldiers. They really are. And as good soldiers, they can see that this plan is massively flawed and won't help the cause. And the fight is pretty much over, do they follow orders or not? They also have to protect their own lives too, since Krell doesn't really give a shit about them.
Well, yeah.
I mean, that's pretty much what the fight is. It's like, do we follow this order or not, no matter how terrible this plan is?
Well, the thing is, they're bred to do that, too, and they do it. When he tells them to die, I mean, in this episode, we're not seeing it yet, but we see a lot. Clones are just, like, getting wasted left and right, you know?
Yeah, and stepped on and disintegrated.
They're just going out by the dozens, and, which is something you don't see as much with I'm getting ahead of us, you know, but with Anakin, you know, you don't see as much of that. Anakin gets out ahead. Anakin's blocking half the lasers for the clones in the front, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There isn't that much. In this one, whoever's out front, they're just the first wave to die, you know?
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, it's a completely different thing.
So, and part of this fight, it makes me really like the character of Dogma a lot, because he's the counterpoint, because he's such a suck-up and an ass-kisser. Mm-hmm. But I kind of sort of wondered how many battles that Dogma has been in, because I kind of get the feeling that he's still kind of a rookie, and that's why he's still willing to, like, blindly follow orders, because that's what good soldiers are do.
Well, we also hear some of the reasons, like, we actually hear a reason in here why, you know, that points to certain clones, you know, clones are bred for certain qualities, but some of them might have that quality more so than others.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we'll find out later, you know, what one of them is a little more aggressive because he said, you know, he was having growth hormone or whatever, like, leaking into his clone tank when he was a baby, or...
Yeah.
You know, or aggression hormone or whatever, so...
Yeah, and that's hard case.
Right. And so Dogma, you know, Dogma might have had the loyal, you know, is more loyal, you know.
Yeah.
Or just, like, has more fealty towards authority.
Yeah. But this also counters Tup, because I feel like Dogma is relatively a rookie, but they say in the first episode that Tup is a shiny, which in the episode rookies means that they're brand new clones, that they haven't seen a lot of battles yet. And this is probably Tup's first big mission, and right away he's just like, guys, there is something very wrong here. So it's interesting having these like kind of rookies, and one is just like, let me kiss all the ass, and the other one's like, guys, we're going to die, aren't we? Oh my god, we're going to die. Guys. So I just really like having these characters just balance, and I'm glad they have a character like Dogma here too, because Dogma being a clone telling his other clone brothers, no, this is right, this is what we're going to do, it massively like counterpoints like people like Fives and Rex, especially Fives, because Fives is like, guys, we should all just like not listen, and Dogma's like, no, we should listen, that's what good soldiers do. So it adds that conflict to that narrative, especially since it's coming from a clone. It's one thing if it was Krell going, you guys should listen. They'd be like, ha, fuck you.
Well, it also gives them a chance to do, and now I'm thinking of this more now that you told me about the director of this one. It's, can you hear the cicadas outside? Oh my god.
We have our own cicadas, so I'm hearing those.
We just had it's just cicada time at night, and it's just getting that darkness. Mm. But they get to, you get to have that classic war movie scene where each character weighs in, and they're all different, you know. You get to hear every facet of what's going on opinion-wise, because you've got all, you know, all the different characters there to say, you know, I think we shouldn't do it. Well, I think this is perfect, and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, so it's just a classic war movie. And then the rookie, like, oh, God, I think I need to change my uniform. So, you know, it's just a classic war movie thing. And it's funny that it's got that director, because it's got that feel of classic old war movies, but it's also got the grit of more modern warfare movies.
Yeah.
I like that.
All right, so my next note. And this is broken into three parts. So, because I know. So I wanted to talk about Fives and Rex. And so I'm going to break this down between Fives first and then Rex, and then comparing them together. So Fives, I love in this opening scene. He's the one that's asking every single important question that Rex personally, I don't think, is ready to face. Like, Rex isn't there yet. And I kind of compare Rex and Fives as the slow track versus the fast track. So Fives took the fast track. He knows that there is something up with this bigger war, and that there's something more sinister going on, and he just doesn't know what it is yet, but he knows that something is weird. And he's questioning everything. He's fighting Rex on orders. he knows that he's only there to protect his brothers, and he's there to save the rest of the Domino Squad. So, Rock Fives is totally on the fast track of there is something going on that's wrong.
I totally agree. And I think Rex knows there's something wrong in this situation, but he's not addressing it because he's like, there's nothing I can do about it. So he's trying to just field as little dissent as possible. So he doesn't want to view his own doubts because he doesn't want to get people going, yeah, you're right, you know? Because there's just no point in it. So he's just doing damage control, you know?
Yeah.
He's like, how do I save as many of my men's lives right now in this situation? So he's cutting all sorts of, you know, devilish bargains with himself to just, you know, make sure that, you know, as many of them come out of this as possible and that they possibly win, even though they don't like the tactics they're using. So he's kind of screwed. But Fives is right. There's something wrong. And you know, I mean, if it was something that had actually caught on amongst the clones, it could have taken the Star Wars universe in a totally different direction, you know?
Yep. I will say, without giving away, you're touching on season 6 right now.
Oh, okay.
So that's all I will say. Now, to Rex, he's on a much slower track. Like, we know from Rebels that he eventually gets to the same point that Fives is at now. I think a big reason why Rex is trying so hard not to see the truth is because I don't think he just flat out wants to see it. I think there's kind of like an ignorance is bliss thing. I think he believes in people like Anakin and Ahsoka because they haven't steered him wrong before. And I think he wants to believe that the Republic is good.
He's bonded with Anakin and Ahsoka, too, you know, whereas Fives probably hasn't bonded with too many Jedis or his superiors because of he's five. Fives, you know?
Yeah. And so I think that Rex is still at a point that, like, ignorance is bliss, and he just doesn't want to see that there's a bigger thing going on, and he's just trying to live day to day. Now, to compare the two of them together, I think that this progressed differently with varying things throughout the show so far that has changed their views. Rex has had a lot more positive experiences in the Clone Wars. Like, he got to see Cutla Quain, the deserter, make a life with him and his family, and that was really nice. And
yeah, but at the same time, that's a little subversive to him, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, he realized in that episode that they were doing the exact same thing. Rex was fighting for his brothers, which is his family, and Cut was fighting for his family. And they were both fighting like specifically to protect people. So they're still essentially doing the same thing.
Yeah, but you know, Rex. Okay, let's bring this up though. Rex in that episode, or in this episode, Rex talking to his men is like, "Look, we're here to follow orders. We're gonna follow orders." And with Cutler Quain, you know. He can admire the guy all he wants, but at the same time, it's a deserter clone, so Rex follows orders, right? But, I mean, I think that's, like, a huge thing that Rex did not turn him in. You know, it was like, I didn't see anything, you know, what nobody knows, nobody is not going to hurt anybody. He's not getting direct orders, but it's defying all of what he's supposed to do in that situation. So he has it in him to do that, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's a big part of what this arc is as well, is, like, the difference, like, him trying to find that mojo. But, yeah, Rex, I feel like, has had a lot more positive experiences. Like, he knows that Anakin Ahsoka has his back, and they're very mournful of them in their lives, of the men that are lost and stuff like that. Now, Fives never really got that. Like, the three times that we've seen Fives in the show, people really close to him has died. The first time was in Rookies, and he lost over half the Domino Squad, which was his training squad. 99 died, who was his kind of mentor on Kamino when Kamino was invaded, and then Echo died back in the Citadel arc. Like, every time we've seen Five, something absolutely bad has happened to him. And Rex was the captain at the start of the series, and he was personally trained by Anakin. And Five is an ARC trooper. They only call in ARC troopers when shit is terrible. So I feel like that's one of the things that have, like, really greatly, directed their views is Rex, like, it's still a war, and he's seen a lot of that shit, but he's seen a lot more positive sides, opposed to, so far with Fives, we've seen him see nothing but negative stuff this entire way.
That's true.
Oh, man, what? I'm gonna go back to Cut Laquan for a second, though, because you made me think of something. Do you think with the episode of The Deserter, that was the first time we got to see Rex as a character outside of being a soldier? It really was.
Yeah.
We got to see, because up to that, because I think that's
it might be the only time, really.
Yeah, and right? I think that's what Cut was doing, because, you know, Rex kept talking protocol, and Cut was like, play a game! Talk with my family! Eat some food! You know, like, I think that was the first time that he made Rex think, stop being a soldier, and we got to see Rex as a character. Because now that I think back of that episode, that I'm thinking about it now, Rex in that episode reminds me of a lot of Rex in Rebels. He's a lot more chill and relaxed, and, like, he knows when to pick up a blaster and fight.
Right.
But, like, he was, I feel like that was the first, like, that Rex in Deserter is the closest we've come to Rex in Rebels. And he had to go back to being Soldier Rex, and now he's Soldier Rex again. And I think that's kind of what's going on in this episode, like, with all this stuff with Krell, because he very much wants to be the person Rex and not the soldier Rex, but he has to be the soldier Rex when person Rex is going, this is wrong, soldier Rex going, we have to do this.
Yeah. I mean, so soldier Rex is pretty much trapped in being soldier Rex. That one time that he got to not be soldier Rex and just be Cut Laquan's buddy Rex is just sort of this weird, like, almost separated from his normal reality, you know, almost like a little pocket dimension that he got to enter for a little while.
Are you saying the good Mortis?
What's that?
The good Mortis?
Yeah, sorta. It's just, it was just one of those things where he reached somewhere where all the, you know, all the ingredients were right to where he could do that for a limited amount of time, you know. So he got like just a little vacation from being a clone, just because he happened to be trapped there out of communication, you know. He was sort of forced into it, and on top of that, he was in that situation with Cut Laquan. So it's just this sort of weird little thing that he got to experience. But if I were him, I'd be like, yeah, what are the odds that that's ever going to happen again? The only out that I could see as a clone is like, okay, there could be some point where we win the war and I time out, you know, and I get to retire.
Yeah.
Or something like that. And that's something I'd like to see whatever was planned for the retirement of clones once that, you know, and how clones would be treated as like citizenry after a war, you know. I don't know what the plans were, if they'd be looked down on or if they'd be looked up on as badasses.
I've always kind of imagined, because there's so many clones, and then this is just a headcanon of mine, this is nothing actual official canon or anything, I would have loved to see the clones be like, can we be represented in the Senate? Can we have a senator? You know, because there's a million of us.
I could see him like taking over some planetoid with no sentient life on it and just being like soldiers of fortune, you know?
Yeah. But, like, I could see them just going to the Kamino senator and be like, hey, there's a million of us. We want to be our own senator. And and Halle Berry, whatever her name is, just being just like, ha-ha, that's funny. Oh, wait, you're serious. Oh.
See, I think those guys are slimy enough that if it ever got to that point where they and the clones might have the power to do some or form a space class action lawsuit or something like that, that they would have a secret button that they could push somewhere and all the clones would just go, and like, keel over,
well,
you know?
Well, they have inhibitor chips. They do have inhibitor chips in their brain. We know that now. So.
Right. So, you know, yeah.
But about Cut Laquan, I keep going back to him. something that's kind of interesting that kind of comes up in this episode is Krell keeps calling Rex by his number, right? He calls all the clones by their numbers. He doesn't call them by their names. And something I remember from the Deserter episode is Rex and Cut having that conversation about names versus numbers. And Cut was like, well, you have a name. And he's like, why do you have a name? And Rex is like, well, it's my name. It's really efficient. And Cut goes, more efficient than calling you by numbers? And Rex was like offended. He was like, but I'm Rex. I am that. And it's now coming up again in this episode that Krell is doing the opposite. Because, like, I feel like in that moment, Cut was, like, empowering Rex to be like, yes, you need to be Rex. And now Krell's trying to rip that away from him. You know, looking back on it, The Deserter is such an important episode of Rex. And I know it was, like, it was my 10 for 10 episode of season one. And
I'm sure you addressed, I'm sure you were conscious of that when we did that episode.
Yes, I was kind of conscious of that, but it's also just a really good episode. I was kind of like, keeping conscious of that, but I didn't think about it as much now that the more we're talking about it, I'm looking back on it, and I was like, yeah, there was a lot of good things in that episode that really applies to now, so I would say you guys should go back and watch The Deserter if you made it to this point.
Well, last episode you were talking about how they often refer to each other by name because they have masks on. But then in this episode, when they're battling a little and they're running around and they're calling each other by name, and it's definitely more efficient and easier to just, you know, go fives, you go this way and blah, instead of the numbers and having everybody's brain have to figure out the numbers. You know, the numbers are probably like, they all start with CT to start out with.
Yeah, or ARC, because now that Five's got voted, he is ARC 5555.
Right, so it's definitely more, you know, when the more efficient on the battlefield to have a shortened name that just like immediately tells you who you're speaking to. So I can see that, but yeah, he started calling him Rex the last time, and he's right back to. He reverts right back, you know. It was just like a little bit of quote unquote humanity poked through, empathy poked through, and then just like got swallowed back up, and he's back to his old douchey self.
If I can say, dear Wikipedia, please stop using the CT numbers when talking about clones in your articles. Because I was reading through your articles, and especially for this episode, it would have, you know, they would name Rex. But then every time they were like put something for fives, it'd be like ARC 5555, and I was like, what? Oh, that's fives. And I was looking through it, and like I was looking up stuff on the 501st for the extra information notes.
Yeah, just tell them stop being Krells.
Yeah, and I was just like, Wikipedia. I don't know if this is... I had to click on a few ones because I was trying to find stuff on Sergeant Apo, and I was like, okay, let me click on this CT number. Oh, that's Jesse. Let me click on this CT number. Okay, that's Kix. Let me click on this one. Right. Okay, there you are, Apo. I found you. Come on, Wikipedia.
They're trying to be more official, you know?
Yeah,
that, guess. They're trying to be more...
It was annoying.
Yeah.
as a clone lover, I got annoyed. Don't my babies have names? What's that song? I know, I'll write your name. What's that song? I don't know. It's from the 90s. So, well, that's all I have for that big act one.
Act one is probably has the most characterization and story arc or character arc to it. Part two and three are like action, you know.
I don't know. I still have a lot of notes for Act 2.
I'm sure you do. You definitely don't have as many as Act 1. I mean, Act 2 and Act 3 are just, like, have a lot more fighty-fighty to them.
Yeah, so... Act 2?
Act 2.
All right.
Fighty-fighty.
So Rex took some of Five's words into consideration and changes Krell's plans just a tad little bit. Instead of marching everyone into the gorge, Rex splits the battalion into two groups so everyone won't be sitting ducks together. Rex leads one group, and Fives leads the other. Everyone is on high alert. The glowing birds of Umbara fly away, looking spooked by something. And suddenly, the ground shakes. A metal centipede tank bursts from the ground with Umbarans controlling it from the inside. Yes, the clones are being attacked by humanoid centipedes. Not the kind that you're thinking about, winky face. But in all seriousness, this thing is deadly. This is a tank that is long, segmented with shields, and has turret guns on the top of it. Fives retreats his men to the trees for better cover. They really need rocket launchers to take them out, which they don't have any at the moment, so Fives calls in a mayday. Rex sends down his rocket crew. So much for sneaking around in two teams, am I right? The clones with the rocket launcher gets trampled, and guess who gets the rocket launcher? Hardcase, who is very excited about his new big gun. He blows up the centipede tank, saving Fives and his men. Rex regroups everyone into the trees. There's still two centipede tanks to take out. They only have about a minute to come up with a plan before the tanks come around again. Rex commands them to set up detonators around the gorge and the trees to bottleneck the tanks and trap them for it to make them easy targets and blow them sky high. Because Rex is the smartest and the prettiest and the best. The tanks fall for the clone trap and run right over the detonators. As they blow up, the clones flee, and Rex gets a cool guy explosion moment, jumping through the air, and he gets his men out of there. They have to keep moving, making their way through the carnage of the battle. The medic kicks, gets angry at the Umbaran birds trying to eat his dead clone buddies, blasting them with his gun. But Rex says they don't have time to deal with the wounded, and they have to leave their dead buddies behind to be snacks. They even shoot out an Umbaran survivor and move on. Rex checks the route ahead and spots a big old, more big tanks. And they kind of look like swans to me. What did they look like to you, Chris? Because I call them swan tanks.
Oh, to me, they remind me of those spidery bots that were attacking Kazeek in episode 3 a little bit.
Yeah, but they have those like long necks with the big kind of heads at the top.
They've got the big swan neck laser on top of them, or blaster of some sort.
Yeah, I call them swans. I just wanted a second opinion, because they're like spider swans.
Yeah.
Spider swans! Spider swans! They don't know ever what spider swans do. Okay, spider swans. They see more big tanks that look like spider swans. So we're going to call them spider swans. And they fire on the clones, and the 501st takes cover. Guess who doesn't care about the clones under fire? That's right, General Court Crowell, who is sitting pretty on top of a hill watching all the action. He calls into Rex, telling him to push the attack, and Rex is like, "Are you insane? Do you see those spider swan tanks? They're spitting laser beams at us! I'm going to quote Hamilton for a second, because we are outgunned, outmanned, outnumbered, outplanned. General Krell, we need help." And Krell is like, "I don't give a shit. You're on your own. Bye, Felicia." And he hangs up on Rex. And Sergeant Apo comes up to Krell like, "Maybe we should go help Rex out." And Krell is like, "Well, if Rex dies, you want to lead the 501st? And then Apo has a dark internal monologue, realizing that that's a possibility. He could be commander of the 501st and one day kill a Padawan in episode 3. Anyway, back to Rex. So the swan tanks have a really terrible weapon. It shoots out electricity, jumping from clone to clone and disintegrating them. Disintegrating, no bodies, they're just gone, poof, bye. And Rex hands over the wounded to Kix, the medic, and Rex goes, "All right, we gotta move out like Krell says." And Jesse the Joker doesn't think it's funny anymore. And he's like, "You're shitting me right now, right?" And Fives is like, "Seriously, I think Krell is trying to kill us. Like, it's a big evil plot with the Republic or something." And Dogma is like, "I love Krell. He's the best." And no one cares, Dogma. And Fives grabs Rex and he's like, "Bro, wake up. Get woke. We can't fight those things." And Rex is like, "We don't have better ideas here. We have to go." And they rush out there, knowing that this is a terrible plan, and everyone is at their end of the rope. So why not? And it goes terribly. It goes about as well as they planned. The rocket launchers don't work on the spider swan droids. One of the droids steps on Kix's medical area, crushing some wounded guy. And at least he's not wounded anymore, because he's dead.
Medical area sounds like your bathing suit area or something. He stepped on his medical area. Ow!
Well, he did kind of just step right in there and crush him, and Kix barely jumped out of the way, and he was just like, ah! So, he stepped on his medical area and all of him. So, Rex and Fives are running their men back and forth like a game of duck shooting at a carnival, and the Umbarans are just having the best time shooting at them. And it's just a bad day all around. And Rex and Fives rush back to Kix to help with the wounded. And they're trapped, and they're surrounded, and the Umbaran vultures are trying to eat the dead bodies and the wounded men. And Kix wants to run back out into the battlefield and get the other wounded men. And Rex gives Kix an order to leave the wounded behind. Kix, taking after his friend Fives, says the golden line to Rex, which is, "You sound just like General Krell." And Rex doubles down, saying that they need to stay alive right now. But something awakens in Rex, because he has a crazy idea that might just save all their skins, and it gives Fives a very special ARC Trooper mission. What do you think of Act 2?
I loved Act 2. It upped the ante of creepiness by adding those scavengers into the mix. That now, not just the dead or the wounded, you're going to have these things trying to land on, space moray eel thing, bug things landing on you and trying to eat you. So it just keeps getting worse and worse for them, Mm-hmm. It's very Vietnam. It's just like, it's a hostile environment, They're in a foreign hostile environment. They're on somebody else's turf, too, So they're just... they just screwed.
Yeah.
I noticed the clones have to do a lot of, besides just calling themselves by name, they do a lot of hand acting. when they're like, you go over here and blah, blah, blah. So
it's just to
keep it. Yeah, and it helps keep it more dramatic. And I kept thinking, man, when the spider swans attack, if Anakin were there, Anakin would be getting on top of those and lightsabering the swan necks off the top of them and taking them down with a lightsaber like a Jedi.
Yeah.
Pulling down big chunks of rock on them and stuff like that. But Krell just sort of hangs out in the back. He is the leader, so Anakin is a little foolhardy, though, too. So Anakin puts himself at a lot more risk than he should, as a commander. So Krell is being more commander-like by being like, I could be out there killing tanks, but it's more, I'm the commander here, so it's better to have me here, which is debatable.
That reminds me of a conversation I had with my coworker, because we were talking, because my coworker Christy and I, like, we always talk about movies and stuff like that at work, and we were talking about Wonder Woman, and the scene where Wonder Woman is talking to all the World War I generals in England, she was like, "You mean you don't fight with your men? You don't go out there to the front lines and fight with your men? What's wrong with you?" And then we started talking about how in history that was common. Like, during the Revolutionary War, George Washington went out there and fought with his men. And same thing in the Civil War, and how we moved away from that. And I don't know what point I'm trying to make, but that conversation reminded me of that.
Yeah, if I'm gone, then there's no leadership to this, and then we die, So it's better that I stay alive. But I don't know. Rex could do a pretty good job of leading the troops and getting the mission done, which
I think he would have done a better job if Anakin just left. If Anakin just left and Krell never showed up,
and Krell never showed up, they would have achieved the same goal with a lot less clone death.
Especially since, like, Rex knew the plan. He was like, he tried to tell Krell, he was like, okay, well, I know Anakin's plan. Let's do this. And Krell's like, no, I have a new plan.
Yeah, and
that's
Rex would have had the loyalty of his men, too. So, but just on a strategic level, that's what I think Krell was thinking. But at the same time, if I was there and I was just like, geez, I could, those tank things are wiping us out, I could get rid of 3/4 of them in like 30 seconds. Yeah, probably be a good idea, you know?
I have to wonder what, like, Sergeant Apo was thinking, like, watching them down there, and he's safe up there with the crown. He's just like, I have to wonder if he's just like, oh, okay.
I mean,
glad
this,
I'm not down there.
This might be some of the most, the most clones we see killed in this, in an episode of this show.
Mm-hmm.
Or in a battle. The only part I can think of so far that's been a little, that was about, like, in the same bloodthirsty level as where they were all coming down in their, you know, troop carriers, and that one guy got, like, flew through the air, grabbed onto the other one, you know.
Yeah, I think Geonosis is the next closest thing that I can think about.
Yeah.
So that was pretty brutal.
That was more brutal towards the bug side, though, you know.
Well, both sides were pretty
bad. There's
a guy hanging out of a ship screaming as it was on fire.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I was saying, but it's this one's more one-sided. It's more the clones getting wiped out. And when they wipe out one of those centipede things, it looks like there's, like, one Umbaran in the centipede thing, you know?
Yeah.
As opposed to the 100 clones that they just took out, you know, with it.
Yeah, I'm assuming there's more because there's turret guns on the top and they keep swiveling and shooting at things. Mm. So I'm assuming there's probably a few more
Some
in there.
Some people mounting them in there, yeah, possibly.
Yeah. Man, a big centipede tank with turret guns on the top. That's just brutal.
The sound effects for it are so amazing. It's just, when it first, like, rears out of the ground, it makes a screaming sound, and then it's got a mechanical cranky clanking to it. And then when they start hitting them with the rocket launchers, they've really upped their explosion software, too. Because there's like, for A, the colors that when these things explode, they have a different sort of color to them that's really nice and like brilliant blues and reds in with a regular explosion. And I noticed that there's a lot of sparks too when there's things explode, and the sparks are like blurring and look very realistic and are very well done and well layered in it. The explosions of those centipedes are so neat, and the clones all have a really dirtied up and badass look to them in this, you know.
I noticed that too. At one point, like, Rex is like really clearly grimy.
Yeah, he's just got dark carbon scoring all over him, and he looks like he's just got, and he's looking lean and mean and ready to just kill a bunch of Umbarans. And, yeah, it's just really nice visual and audio and the work in this one, as usual, in color work and everything. But as they've stepped up the animation, it just is, it's more, even more engaging, and it's getting more in that, you know, remember at first I would compare the first season, like, you just got to think of all the characters as puppets.
Yeah.
What do you call it? The puppets with the strings.
Marionettes?
Huh? Marionettes. Yeah. They move like marionettes. And now there's none of that. It's getting more and more like real people and real creatures all the time. And more like an illustration coming to life. So I'm really loving it.
Yeah, I mean, I love everything about the Umbara centipede tanks. Like, they're just such a cool concept, and like that screaming sound it makes is still a very metallic scream.
Mm-hmm.
It actually kind of almost reminds me of like Grievous screaming. It's a very metallic scream sound, and it's just such a cool design. And like, that's actually one of my favorite pieces of like Star Wars machinery. Like, I'm not one for ships. Like, I know people are like, oh man, Star Wars ships and stuff. I'm not really one for that, but I love those freaking Umbaran centipede tanks. And then the swan spiders. Like that.
Well, they're very steampunk. They have a very steampunk look to them.
Yeah. And, like, there's a lot of really nice action shots in this episode, too. Like, there's one when Fives calls in a Mayday and Rex and his men are running down the field, down the hill. You see Rex looks down, and you can see down the hill the centipede swarming around the men.
Yeah.
And that's just a really nice shot. But there's other ones too, like when Rex is looking through the binocs and you see the spider swan come out and then it turns and it fires and you see it coming at him. There's just a lot of really nice shots in this scene. And something I noticed last episode, I don't think I said it, I think I meant to, but it happened in this episode as well. There's a lot of first-person point-of-view shots, which is something they don't do a lot. Like, I remember last week, there was a shot that was first-person, and you're the person holding the blaster, shooting and turning. And it was from a clone's point of view and seeing what they saw. And they don't do that a lot, especially in the animated shows. That's very hard to animate. Because I remember them talking about that in the Rebels episode that's from the point of view of Agent Kallus, and it has that opening scene where Kallus wakes up and he sits up and he's looking around his room. Dave Filoni was like, we would have loved to have done that entire episode just like that. It is ridiculously expensive to do. So we couldn't do it. We could only do it for the first, like, 20 seconds. But it was so cool to have these shots that were from the clones' point of views, and for like split seconds, you're the one holding the blaster as the viewer, turning and shooting. And I really love those moments. I think it's really great.
Well, they go by really quick in this too, so that makes them a little less expensive, and you don't have to sell them as much when they go by in a second or two, you know?
Mm-hmm. There's so many great shots in this episode. I just want to talk about Dee Bradley Baker for a second. He's the voice of the clones, and he's just so amazing in this arc. I mean, all the clones are so good. They all have, like, their different, like, little tendencies and stuff. Like, you know, Rex is really gruff, and so is Fives. But, like, Top has this kind of, like, light voice, guys. He's just like, I'm new here. Hey, what's up? And, like, Dee just does such a great job in this. But there's one thing that in this episode that really caught my ear. And it's when Rex is sending his men down to go bail out Fives during the centipede attack. And when Rex is giving the orders, I heard something, and I never noticed it before, and like the bajillion times I've watched this episode, there's a split second where Rex is very breathless, and he sounds really scared. Like, he sounds scared. And he was just like, go, just go. And it was such a subtle little thing for Rex in that moment to sound just really scared. And it was such a nice little touch that I never noticed before, because that really added a lot to Rex in that one moment.
Yeah, he's sending a lot of people off to death.
Yeah. It was just a nice little moment. And just Dee Bradley Baker does such a good job in this arc, because he's pretty much spending four episodes talking to himself.
Yeah.
So... If I could change one thing about this episode, just one thing, it would be where the scene where Rex is under fire and he's calling Krell for reinforcements, and Krell yells at Rex to keep attacking and to keep doing a forward frontal attack against the spider swans. And what I would have changed is for Rex not to be wearing his helmet in that exchange. And I know that they're under attack and they're in the middle of a battle, and it would not have made sense for Rex to take off his helmet in that one scene because they're under attack. But the way the shot is filmed, you see Krell and then you just see Rex's helmet. I would have loved to have seen Rex's facial expressions in that moment. Because it was kind of a very private moment for Rex having this conversation with Krell. And as an audience member, I would have loved to see the look on Rex's face when he realizes that they're on their own. Krell does not care. And I can just only imagine what he looked like, but I would have loved to have seen it.
I think it would have also, like, literally put a human face on Rex, too.
Yeah.
Made Krell have to look him in the actual, you know, eye to eye.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that I would have improved that scene a lot.
Yeah. Like, that is my only gripe of this episode, is I would have loved to have seen that moment where, like, he's like, we need help, and Krell's like, no, and, like, his eyebrows just sink, and he looks really confused.
Pretty tiny gripe.
And then he, like, has this moment where he's just like, you have a look on his face, and, like, it dawns on him that they're not getting help, they're on their own. Oh, God, what do I do? And I just, that's my, the tiniest gripe, but I think it would have made that scene, like, so much more better. So, okay, so I want to talk about Kix for a minute. Kix, the very important medical clone, the only clone that makes it to the Force Awakens timeline. How great he is, and I love him. He's kind of the gentle heart of the group. He's definitely the gentle heart of the fight over first. And I love that the gentle heart kicks, of all people, turns on Krell's plans, and it's and he turns when he can't go help people, because he wants to go help those people, and Rex is like, no, we have to follow Krell's plan. And Kix, as we've seen from the deserter, is like the gentle one and the soft one. And finally, like, he loses his shit when he can't go help people, and he is like, Rex, you're acting like Krell.
Well, of course Rex is, he has to act like Krell. He's a proxy of Krell.
Yeah.
It sucks for him, but that's his lot in life.
But I love that moment with Kix, though, because I think that is definitely Kix's turning moment when he's like, what do you mean I can't go help the wounded? That's right. My job. And it kind of reminds me of the deserter when Rex is hurt. Kix is the one that pushes Rex down and goes, I'm sorry, Captain, you're injured. I now outrank you because it's my job to.
Yep.
And so I would almost have liked a callback to that where Kix was like, Rex, I'm outranking you because there's injured men here. It's my job to go get them. And, like, them having to hold him back. He's like, no! But I liked that was the moment for Kix, that he can't go help the wounded, so therefore he does not like this plan.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And my last note for this section is, I just like seeing Rex push to the end of his rope. I don't think it's not knowing what to do. Like, he knows what to do, and he knows what to do for his men. I think it falls back to that argument of a good soldier and following orders. And I honestly believe that that's why Rex is being a little bit more reckless, because Krell is constantly holding the mission over his head, and he's just like, Obi-Wan's gonna die if you don't succeed. Go out there. So I don't think it's Rex being reckless. He knows that he has to follow orders, just as we've been saying. But I think I love watching Rex in this position, which sounds terrible. I love watching him suffer.
Well, it's good drama, yeah.
Yeah.
It adds to the tension and drama, that's for sure.
And I spent this entire arc watching going, oh my god, this is it. This is when Rex dies. Oh my god. So, yeah. Well, that's all I have for Act 2. Do you have anything else?
No, ready for more battle?
The fun part of the episode?
The fun part, yeah. The part where the tension finally breaks, yes. I am
and
ready for that.
And it's just fun?
Yeah.
Okay, Act 3. So Krell calls to Rex going, yo, you dead yet? And Rex is like, no, sir, I'm not dead. I came up with something better than dying. I sent two men to the airbase to steal one of their planes and blow up the Swan droids. And Krell is like, you actually think two clones can be smart enough to do that? I want you to face those two tanks head on, or I will relieve you from duty. And Rex is like, I can't hear you, what? We have a bad connection. Bye now. And he hangs up on Krell. They have to hold out for Fives and Hardcase. So Captain Descent and Sergeant Trigger Happy sneak through the woods. I like those names for them. And Hardcase is like, I can't believe that we're doing this. This is the best day ever. And Fives is like, I'm seriously going to give you Adderall if you don't calm down. And they get to the airbase, and it's surrounded by an electrical field. Fives sets up some bombs along the tree before they scale up the tree and slide over the wall. One of the glowing vulture droid birds things almost gives them away, but they kill it quietly and get onto the base. Sneaking up to the airship, Fives blows up the tree to cause a distraction. The very few guards go check it out so our heroes can run to the ships. They have no idea how to fly these things, and they do what all smart people do in this situation. They just start mashing buttons. Hardcase is having the time of his life, because he gets the ship to work, and they're up in the air, and now he has really big guns. Fives and Hardcase crash into everything, and the Umbaran tech is really good, because now it's being used on the bad guys, because the bad guys are shooting their ships, but they're ray-shielded, so the clones are being protected from getting shot. And they're having so much fun blowing up some ships, and laughing, and cackling, and just blowing shit up. But they finally get control of the airships and head back to their brothers. Rex is in the weeds, and he needs help, since Krell is being useless. Right when it looks like the end for Rex, Fives and Hardcase arrive and destroy the tank. Hardcase has a literal blast shooting everything in sight. The two, well, I wouldn't call them new pilots, so I'll just call them children with shiny toys, save the day. Even Krell is impressed and finally moves in the rest of the 501st to take the airbase. They easily capture the airbase and take it control of it. Rex congratulates Fives and Hardcase on their win and saving everybody. Of course, guess who rolls up to ruin the party? General Krell! And Krell is like, you should be happy that you were so lucky today. And Rex is like, excuse you, lucky? You were the ones who sent us in on a suicide mission with no support. We lost a lot of good men, and we saved our own skins. No thanks to you. And Krell is like, well, people die in war, Buttercup. And Krell grips, and Rex grips his fist, but holds his tongue. Krell leaves the clones, and Fives is like, guys, next week, why don't we just start ignoring him or something? We obviously care more about this war than he does. And Rex is like, oh, we'll have to see when we get to the next episode. The end.
You know what clones need?
What?
Rocket packs.
Yeah, Plo Clones Group has what? Rocket packs. The Wolf Pack has them.
Rocket packs would have really come in handy right there. Would have saved them a lot of trouble. It would have been just like zoop, zop, zip. Done and done.
Yeah, though I kind of like them sliding on the tree branch and it has that like rubbery sound of loop.
That was fun. No, I like that. And I like the look of the enemy base. I like the way the ships are. I like how it's sort of like creepily uninhabited. Yet
yeah,
they're there.
That was actually
just
one of my notes. I was like, where is everybody?
They're all around the edges. They're probably all in one place. I don't know. It just has a weird, creepy thing and only groups of them come out at a time or whatever. You know, they're probably all somewhere else launching stuff by remote. Who knows? But it just feels really creepy. And it's quiet. It's like super quiet. It's neat. I like it. That was my only real note on this, except for the prefer a good fight rather than the sneaking around, which is, you know, right out of Han Solo's mouth.
Mm-hmm.
But Dave Filoni already said that.
Damn you, Wikipedia.
I'll get you, Wikipedia.
Yeah, name your clones. Don't use CT numbers.
When you
They're
least
really confusing.
Expect it, would Wikipedia, when you least expect it.
Well, for me, I win a ton of missions of just Fives and Hardcase. Because they're just a lot of fun together.
Yes.
That was very much needed. This is a very tense episode. So, like, just having that break of having, like, Fives and Hardcase just snipping at each other.
Well, I have to say, when they stole those ships, that was, like, the first time since the original trilogy of Star Wars where I had a true, like, woohoo, yahoo moment, you know, where it was just like, oh my god, this is, you know, where you're just that, it's hard to describe, but it's just sort of a feeling I associate with Star Wars, where, you know, you feel like you're behind the wheel of those ships, and just the way that they were different from other ships, and, you know, how they approached it. I just like how they took their helmets off and they even had a little area underneath. They're like, okay, I can set my helmet down under here. It just drew you right into that moment kinetically, and it was great. It was just a riot to watch, and it was just like, oh, finally, after all this pounding that they've taken, we get to see them, you know, fight back and in a riotous way.
Yeah, like every time I watch that scene, I just laugh. I laugh so hard every time, and they remind me of like kids driving bumper cars.
Yeah,
and they're both actually.
It drives
like,
sort of like a bumper car. Now that you mentioned that, it has that sort of thing where, you know, it's not exact. It just keeps, you know, even when you're turning, you're still turning from your last turn. You know.
You know, and I think a lot of it is that, like, for them, like, you know, we've seen the Umbarans fly; they can fly straight. Fives and Hardcase just kind of barrel roll because they don't know how to fly straight, so they just roll.
Yep, they're just rolling around, and whenever anything gets in front of them that they gotta shoot, they hit fire.
Yeah, as they were leaving, as I noticed it, because I remember the ships flying earlier in the episode, they were flying straight. When they're like, yeah, Fives and Hardcase, and Fives is like, let's go home, and they're rolling away.
Yeah.
They're not even flying, they're just rolling away. It's just such a good scene, because I don't think the clones have fun a lot, and I feel like in that moment, like, Hardcase and Fives honestly had fun.
Oh, they were having a riot. They were laughing and
screaming.
Yeah, whooping it up. So, yeah, of course.
And I think that's a really nice moment, too, because, we've talked about it before. They probably don't get hugs. They probably don't have fun. They probably don't have a lot of downtime. And it was just a very nice moment in the middle of all this chaos.
Yeah.
But they just had fun. And I don't think that... I think this is the first time in Clone Wars we've seen the clones just have fun. I can't think of another time.
Don't have things to do to have fun. But this was just... It's like Rex having that magic time with the runaway clone. They just had a chance. It's okay, here's your mission. And then they're like, once they get behind then they're like, oh, all right, this mission's gonna be fun now. We get to enjoy ourselves. And the fact that they were turning the tide is also, after all that, was probably making them very happy too. It was just a great. It was after two episodes of tension. That was the perfect ending.
Yeah. Two other little notes I have. Just going back to a moment with Kix, that he's just so pissed off that he's shooting at the air, and someone has to tell him to save his ammo because he's wildly shooting at the air. I mean, that's where these guys are now. They're just at the end of everything, and yep, that's where they are at. The medic is pissed and shooting at the scout.
Going a little crazy.
Yeah. If you shot a blaster up in the air, since it's light, will it just go on forever until it eventually hits something?
I have a feeling it would eventually just keep getting diffused. I imagine there's, like, going through atmosphere, and eventually at some point it would get diffused,
That makes sense, because it's not like a bullet. You can't shoot it up and it falls down eventually.
Right, right.
Which was a concept that blew my fucking mind. I never thought about that before. Like, I was like 13 and I saw a movie where these people were shooting a guns on the air in the background, and a character just fell down dead. And I was like, whoa, how did he get shot? They were getting shot up in the... Oh. Like, I never thought about that before. And then it blew my mind as like a 12, 13 year old. I was like, bullets come down.
Yep, there's a whole Kurt Vonnegut movie based on that.
Yeah, yeah.
Or a book movie.
Little teenage me, it just blew my fucking mind. And then the last little moment is this. This episode is called The General, but Krell's actually not in it as much, so I think it should be called Rex's Road Trip from Hell or Fives and Hardcase's Wild Ride.
Yeah, because really, like, I think they should have called the last one The General, because it introduced Krell, because Krell didn't really go anywhere in this one, character-wise. He did the same thing. He did the same arc as he did the last time of, like, I'm a dick, I'm a dick, I'm a dick. All right, yeah, you guys are okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the same. He did the same sort of thing. So, yeah, it was more about this episode definitely was more about the clones.
So I feel like you should have been named something about them. Actually, I have a question. It's not in my notes. I just thought about it. We are halfway through the Umbaran arc now, right?
Right.
And where do you think we are going from here? And I won't say anything. I'm curious.
In this arc?
Yes. Like, what do you think's gonna, like, what do you think is going on with Krell?
I think that's what this arc is gonna be. We're gonna find out something about Krell and... I think as just like the most obvious two story points are, we're going to find out Krell has some sort of history with clones or something. There's some reason that he acts the way he does, or he's a secret bad guy. and we're going to find that out. That's what I'm hoping. It's not the secret bad guy. That would be too easy. I hope it's more complicated, and it's like that Krell has a reason that's actually like a decent reason. You know what I mean? It actually sort of makes sense. And I have a feeling that he will, you know, that this is going to be about him realizing that clones are, you know, clones are people too.
And then they're all going to be like, let's sing Kumbaya. And they're like, no, you're a dick.
Well, yeah, not as much Kumbaya as just like then, pulling him more a little towards the Anakin side, you know, lightening him up a little bit.
And then Dogma is like, I'll sing with you, sir, because I'm Dogma. And he's like, well, Dogma's my friend now.
Or that he can actually, you know, the realization that he can actually work with the clones, you know, rather than just use them as chess pieces. That's sort of where I think we're going with that.
Okay. Well, that's all I have. You want to score up this episode?
I'm ready.
All right, you go first.
This one got a hell of a little bump from the last one. It's very similar to the last episode. It's much better, owing especially to the centipedes in the final battle with Fives and Hardcase, their wild ride. So I gave an 8.75 up points. I think I gave the last one an 8.0, or I can't remember if it was 8.0 or 8.5. I think it was 8.0. And this one jumps up to 8.75. It was beautiful all around. It was well executed all throughout, but the ending just set it apart from the last one. If it hadn't had those two elements in it, I probably would have scored it about the same or maybe even a little lower for just being a repeat of the same of last episode. But no, this one embellished on the last one, and it was really good and gorgeous to look at, beautiful to listen to, and
you can tell it was directed by someone who had worked on war movies.
On war movies before, because it looked gorgeous, and it communicated the desperation and carnage that was being, you know, laid out on the clones. So, yeah, really good episode.
Do you know what the name of the fourth episode of this arc is called?
No.
It's called The Carnage of Krell.
Oh, excellent.
That's the name of the fourth episode of this arc, The Carnage of Krell.
Ooh.
I know.
Ooh.
Ooh. Death. Yay. Palpatine's just like, good, good. Feed the hatred. All right. Well, I went up higher this episode. I love every episode gets better than the Umbara arc. To me, actually, the fourth episode is the worst, and by worst I mean the worst of like choosing between four kinds of candy. So it just gets better and better every episode. Fives and Hardcase stealing the airships and just going wild and screaming and shooting at shit just makes this entire episode for me. I laugh every time I see it. I cackle along with them, and I love everything about that scene. And I just love seeing how much Fives is just over Krell shit. And he's also becoming very different from Rex. You know, you got to kind of remember, he came into this later. You know, we've had Rex from the beginning, you know, and Rex was a captain first off. Fives wasn't. And he's just progressing so much faster than Rex, which just makes him such an amazing character, is how fast he's progressing. And that's why I always say, every time Fives is here, watch Fives. He's important. And I just love seeing how much Rex is struggling against Krell, and he's growing little by little. You have that moment in that end scene where Krell says something to him, and you see Rex clench his fist, because it's that moment that he is like starting to realize that there's bad shit going down. And I just love the rest of the 501st outside of Dogma, and how they're all starting to slowly turn against Krell. And I love the Umbaran tanks and their designs, and this is just another continuation of my favorite arc of Clone Wars. I love it so much. So last week it was a 9, and this week it's a 9.5 out of 10. It's just going up.
Wow.
Oh, I can already tell you, next week's going to be a 9.7, and the one after that's going to be a 10. Spoiler! I know this now. I know how I'm going to score, and I knew how I was going to score this before. So I'm very, very ready for the next 2 weeks. Yeah. Yeah. Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on either iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page, especially on iTunes, because if you rate and review the show, it helps people find the show. So if you like us, give us a drop on iTunes. We would love that. And we'll read it here on the show. This week, our feedback comes from the Two True Freaks Facebook page for our episode, Water War, which was the first episode of the Mon Cala Civil War and the first episode of Season 4. And you have Patrick Delmore.
The first one's from Patrick Delmore, but it's short, which is good, because my voice is a little creaky. He says, worse than Mortis. Yeah, whatever,
Mortis is pretty bad.
Whatever, man. I don't even think Hope's going to back you up on this one. All right, our next one's from Aaron Henley. Sorry, Patrick. Sorry, Charlie. Aaron Henley says, I always wondered one thing in this arc. How long were the air breathers underwater? It seemed like weeks go by in this arc, and we never see Anakin, Padme, Ahsoka out of their scuba suits. So you came up with the same question. So the question is, shouldn't their air have run out or tanks need to be replaced? How do they eat? They have to seriously ripen those suits, right? I know it's nitpicky and super advanced technology, like those little stub things poking out from under the helmet could explain question ones. As the tanks are converting some of the seawater into oxygen like a fish gill, which is totally what I think it's doing, just like the Jedi in Episode 1. But 2 and 3 always bug me, and I noticed you didn't bring up, like we did, the poop coming out.
Yeah, also, I don't think this arc took weeks. I feel like this was maybe a day and a half.
Yeah.
Tops. I think it was a day to a day and a half.
I also wish we had gotten a bit more effects with the lightsabers being underwater like we did in the Tartakovsky series. And Kit's lightsaber being an almost proto Kylo Ren's. Looking forward to hearing your guys' discussion and see you next week for part two.
Mm-hmm.
And he already has seen us next week for part two. And the next one comes from Gene, the podcasting machine, who I will be seeing in a couple weeks.
Yay!
And I saw today, he was like, I didn't get to take my walk today, but I was walking up and down stairs. So maybe I'll even be able to get to take a 2-mile walk with Gene.
And he's referring to us not being able to remember that Idris Elba played Heimdall, because we just both totally blanked on that in the yes. middle of the episode. We were like, who does it? I don't remember.
All right, he says, allow me to address the whole Heimdall Idris Elba thing. When the casting was announced, I was more amused than anything. Heimdall in the lore is referred to as, quote, the whitest of the gods. So I thought it was a great joke. Plus, he's a wonderful actor, and I thought he did a great job in the role.
Was that the episode where I was like, Pablo Hidalgo was tweeting things that made fans mad when they were announced? I think it was that episode. Because I opened the episode, and I was just like, Pablo Hidalgo's on fire. He's tweeting things that made fans mad when they were announced.
And Gene also is responding to, we were asking, you know, we know who the classiest podcast is, that's us, but who's the second classiest podcast? And he says, I'd say the second classiest podcast has to be Trentus Magnus Punches Reality. Anything that has every episode described as ball blanking is right up there with you guys in class. I can't argue with that.
Yeah.
And then Paul C. Kelly said, Hope, I wanted to add another example of how water sucks in video games.
And I didn't know what I was looking at. He added a picture of an 8-bit game, and I had no idea what I was looking
at. It looks like a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle. And Aaron Henley said, no, not that, anything but that. Ah, so Aaron Henley's obviously played this game. And Hope then said, I don't know what that is, but it looks like it sucks.
It does look like it sucks.
And then Paul C. Kelly said, yes, it does. Maybe a little before your time, it was a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles for 8-bit Nintendo. Chris, I think, will know more. But if you really want to know about it, watch this review from Angry Video Game Nerd. And he left a link. Beware, he may be classier than J-Guys. I don't know.
Those are fighting words.
I did not play. I was a little old for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, like, by the time they were a cartoon. I was of the age when they were a comic book. And I read a few of the comic books, and they were, they were more adult when they started out, you know, so it was a different teenage. So by the time the video games came out, I was been. I hear you crinkling a candy.
I'm trying to figure out what I have, but a lot of the things were, I'm running kind of low, so.
Do you have, I know, do you have the Kit Kat now with extra milk and cocoa? It's a red Kit Kat.
I have two red Kit Kats.
Yep, you should have two red Kit Kats. One that's white and one that's with extra milk and cocoa.
Mine just says extra creamy.
Ooh.
It says cocoa plant on the back.
Oh, they might be two different ones.
I have the white one.
Okay.
I'll just do one of these.
You want to do the white chocolate?
Sure, because I know I have that. I don't know if I have an extra creamy cocoa one. Ah, okay. I'm dropping it. Well, Chris doesn't like American Kit Kats because it sucks. And so our friend Dario Gonzalez, who is a flight attendant, sends us Kit Kats and candy from all over the world for us to review. And so I don't have where this one is from. This, I felt it
break.
It
says all Kit Kats come from England. So this is a British from our friends in the UK. And it's white, as you would think, with white chocolate.
Oh, I get to eat Michael Sacha again. Yay.
Oh, it's really soft. Ooh, the brown, it's like, it looks almost like chocolate or graham cracker in the middle of it.
Yeah, and on there it says, hashtag my break. On the Kit Kat. That's really good.
What do you think the flavor is on that, the wafer in the middle of it?
It almost tastes like a pretzel.
You're right. It might have a little bit of malt to it. Like a malted milk ball, maybe?
Yeah, it almost has like a pretzel.
It's almost savory. Like it's not salty, but almost like there's a little salty, savory.
That's what I was about to say. It almost tastes like there's like a hint of salt in there somewhere.
I want to say I would think there was cinnamon in it, but it's not. I can't put my finger on it, but I don't like white chocolate. This is delicious.
I love white chocolate, and this is still delicious. This is really good. I really do. It almost tastes like I'm eating like a chocolate pretzel covered in white chocolate.
That's good.
Dario, this one's lovely.
It's very creamy. Creamy.
That's exactly how I think eating Michael Sacha would taste. Or Riz Ahmed.
I was ready not to like this because it was white chocolate. What a fool I am.
That's really good. Well, where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com, where we post all our podcasts, and you can download them from there, or you can listen to them there, or you can sign up for, you know, on the RSS feed there, or you can sign up for our RSS feed on iTunes. We have a Facebook page, Two True Freaks. We have many other Facebook pages from our individual shows, and we've got a Two True Freaks Cantina.
Chris.
Yes.
We also have an Amazon link.
And an Amazon link on the Two True Freaks page where you can buy all your Amazon stuff, and we will get a little kickback on it, which is basically what keeps us going, what pays for our hosting site. And we've got a Twitter page run by Gene, the podcasting machine. Ba-dum-ba-ba-dum-bum.
Gene.
You did the ba-da-ba-ba-da-bops too this time, not the do-do-do-do-do-do. And yeah, there's a vast presence of Two True Freaks on the internets. Just like there's a vast presence of Hope Mullinexes on the internet. That's you.
That's me. I run our JGuys and Jedi Twitter account. You can find us at JGuys and Jedi. And you can also follow me on Twitter at Hope Mullinex. And I'm also the news writer for whatthefangirl.com. I haven't written anything recently just because I've just... Well, mostly I'm getting ready for Dragon Con, so I'm trying to get a lot of stuff out of the way because I'm going to Dragon Con at the end of the month. But by the time this episode comes out, it'll probably be Dragon Con time, so that doesn't matter to you guys. But my buddy Anika, she writes for What the Fangirl as well, and she does Game of Thrones recaps. So those, I personally don't watch Game of Thrones, but those are always a lot of fun. Anika is a really great writer. I highly suggest checking out her work, especially if you like Game of Thrones. So check
out
Anika.
I like Game of Thrones.
Yeah, so go check out Anika and her Game of Thrones recaps over on whatthefangirl.com. She's been doing those every single week, so yeah. Well, that's all I have.
We'll come back next week when Hope will be probably even more wound up than this week.
Well, next week is the episode is called Plan of Descent. And I can promise you that Captain Descent, Mr. Five, has a plan. Sergeant Trigger Happy and Captain Descent make their comebacks.
Excellent.
Yeah, next week is fine, but oh, that fourth episode. Oh, I'm so excited. I can't wait. And yeah.
Well, Yoda says get your trigger fingers wet ready.
Trigger fingers?
Trigger fingers.
I like trigger figures.
Trigger figures. I'm triggered by people's figures.
Depends on the figure. What kind of, are we talking like Chris Hemsworth figure? Or are we talking like Chris Evans figure?
No, they're numbers.
Oh. I was thinking Chris Evans.
I'm triggered by clones ID numbers.
Wikipedia, change your clone IDs. Put their names. They're people. Clones are people too. Wikipedia, don't be like Krell. You don't gotta be like Krell. You gotta, treat those people like people.
Be like Yoda, not like Krell. God.
Care about your people, man. They're clones. I see them with signs just being like, clones are people too.
Yep.
Yeah.
War is not good for clones or any other kind of life.
No, not at all. So, what if, out of nowhere, wouldn't it be great during the Nomad Droid episodes where they crash on Umbara and they're like just around the corner? They're like, oh dear, there's centipede droids. And they're like, let's run away, R2. That'd be terrible. Let's not do that.
Let's skip that.
Alright, you guys. Bye.
Bye.
Yay.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at TwoTrueFreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at TwoTrueFreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled T-W-O. TrueFreaks.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
We were finally invited aboard one of these spacecraft, which landed near Ann Arbor, Michigan on October the 24th of 1954. This is a drawing of the craft. As I was leaving the craft, the commander, Soltek, said, "Soon others of your people will be able to have an experience similar to this."